Aloha! Cowboy.
Pod people and inhabitants of the planet Earth. It is I, your tiki leader, Steve Mudflap McGrew, saying mahalo for tuning in today. I recorded the show a little earlier. I was having some technical trouble, and you don't notice that until the show is over. Yeah, isn't that always the way it goes? So there's some pops and cracks and whirs in the show, but I can't throw it away because it was a phone interview. So like I can sit somebody down and say, let's do that again. So here's an interview I have with a writer-comedian friend of mine from California named Larry Hyde. I've known Larry for a few years now. I think he's one of the best writers I've ever met. And I got him on the phone today from his day job. He's actually talking to me from the bathroom of his job. And this is the way it went down. Special guest today all the way from, where are you now, Sacramento?
No, I'm in Placerville. It's a little shithole town just north or east of Sacramento.
Okay. Yeah. I'm talking with my pal, Larry Hyde. Larry is a comic turned whatever the hell you do now. What is it?
I'm a comedy writer and also a copier salesman.
There you go. Yeah. So right. I've known Larry for years as one of the funniest comics that I've ever had the pleasure to work with, one of the funniest writers I've ever known, and he's wasting his talents by being in the shithole that he is right now.
I'm actually in a shithole, too. I'm in the bathroom at work because they can't really do this at my desk without, you know, some sort of sexual harassment policy getting tripped or, you know, something I'm going to say is not going to go very well with the lady downstairs. I'll tell you that right now.
Right. I know how that is in this day and age. Everything's HR. Everybody's afraid of HR is one of the scariest words ever.
Yep, it is. You know, and you can't do jokes. You can't talk about anything. You know, I'm afraid. I don't know. I got a Spanish-English dictionary, and I just say the shit that I want to say in Spanish. And everybody goes, oh, right. You know, two languages. He's very smart. Yeah.
Let's give people a little background on you, because the people that are tuning in and listening don't know. Let's start back. Let's go all the way to your dad. Your dad was a big radio guy, right?
Yes, correct. My dad did radio and television in the Sacramento market for about 25 years. Went from Arizona to L.A. to Stockton and Fresno and came up to Sacramento where he stayed for about 25 years.
Do you want to say his name or you want to keep him out of all this?
No. He knows who he is. His name is Johnny Hyde, and if he's listening, forgive me for what I'm about ready to do.
Okay, so the talent, is what I was pointing at, the talent has dribbled down to you.
Well, I became a comic because I didn't have my own identity. I grew up as Johnny Hyde's kid, and that was the weird part, you know. Hey, look, it's Johnny Hyde's son. You know, great. Yeah, okay. Thanks. Appreciate that. So, you know, I started writing jokes when I was in high school.
What was one of your first jokes?
Always wanted to be a gynecologist because there's a lot of openings.
Uh-huh.
That's my opening joke.
That's
my opening joke.
Yeah, that's quite an opening.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and that's when I urinate on myself. So I used to do that, too, as you know, right? Yeah, I had a douchebag underneath my jacket. And, you know, I would go on and on about being nervous, and then just pull this pin, and I was wearing light pants, and then it was just, you know, void on myself. And some people were uncomfortable, the others were laughing their ass off, and I could have done whatever I really wanted to do after that. So, yeah.
Right.
My first paying gig was opening for a male burlesque show. You did that too, didn't you?
I didn't do male burlesque, but yes, I opened for strippers when I first started down in Texas.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I had a club here in Sacramento area, Rancho Cordova, and I won three radio contests in a row, and they just said, well, why don't you be the house comic? You can open for the bands, and we'll pay you. And, yeah, it was all good until they decided the pay wasn't really what they were wanting to do with me. So,
till the ladies were just shouting at you, show us your pee-pee.
That's exactly right. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, my first thing, I was wearing like a green trench coat that I had when I was in the Air Force. And underneath that, I had a pair of boxers with a half a pair of pantyhose sticking out through the hole. It was, you know, stuffed with tissue, so it looked like a big dong. And they kept going, take it off, so I just did. And, yeah, there's this little tiny kid with a huge pecker, you know, and they liked that, but, you know, they didn't listen to a word I said for 10 minutes. They wanted me to take my pants off.
So you were kind of like the Bag Lady Sue of the male world. I don't know if you know who Bag Lady Sue. It's a kind of stripper biker comic that strips down to underwear, and everybody the whole time is just waiting for the stripping part of the
act. Oh, really?
Act.
Okay. All right. I'll have to look that up. Yeah. No, I stopped at Ruby Ann Boxcar, or whatever her name was.
Oh, I love Ruby Ann. Ruby Ann is quite Ruby Ann Boxcar is quite the he-she female impersonator comic, though.
Right. Yeah. Wasn't she going to be in one of the characters? That, I don't know. You were pitching a show at one point, right?
Right. We had actually talked about her actually playing a character in an idea for a show that I had.
I remember that.
She's quite the hick chick, you know.
Well, right now on your podcast, I would like to ask you to revisit that whole show thing because, we've got some great ideas on paper.
I know. You and I have come up with some good ideas for some shows, and I get a lot of people now that are just like, you've seen my Facebook, and I get posts on Twitter like, I can't believe you're not on TV. How have they messed up and not have you on? I guess I am just not cuddled up to the right penis in Hollywood. I guess.
Yes, right. Uh-huh. Well, you know, and you've got a hot girlfriend, too. That might piss him off. I don't know.
That could. Well, I sent you a thing earlier, and I said, what would you like to talk about on the show? And you said one of them was Stamos. you want to talk about John Stamos?
John Stamos was in the news today because he's decided to take that flesh-eating disease girl that had her arms amputated or whatever to Disneyland. So I thought that was really cool, you know.
That is very cool of him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's one of the best looking guys around. I mean, if I saw him in a grocery store, I know I would blow him. And I'm not really gay, but
that's how good looking he was. I kind of thought that about Rob Lowe years ago.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, that he was probably one of the best looking guys around, in not a gay way.
So if I saw Stamos, I'm telling you, I would drop him down in front of Stamos. I would, I'm not even remotely interested in any of that.
Now, what if you saw John Stamos and Rob Lowe together coming at you?
Oh, well, I'd call you and I'd say, would you mind taking this Rob Lowe for a second? Because I got to blow Stamos. Right. Uh-huh. But I tried that gay stuff. I wasn't real good at it, you know. And judging by the look on his face, he wasn't having a great time either. No, I'm serious. I thought he was never going to come.
You didn't. You did not really. You did not really try that.
Let me try it. It was more like forced on me. Oh. Yeah.
That was your Hollywood days?
Sort of. Yeah, I don't know. My dad had one of his DJ buddies babysit me when I was a little kid, so I had to jerk him off. And I got a little taste.
Oh, no, wait. No, not really. Not real.
Oh, yeah, it's real. Yeah, we'll talk about that sometime. Okay.
Yeah. Hey.
He's still best friends with the guy, too.
Your dad is?
Yeah. I didn't tell him about it until about 2 years ago. But,
and by that time, he was like, what the big deal?
Yeah, I know.
Things you got to do for Hollywood,
son. Why didn't you tell me before? Well, you know, it is kind of embarrassing. You know, I mean, I'm like six, and I had to use both hands. He was so huge. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know, hey, that's what happens. And when you have a family full of entertainers, man, you got to do that stuff.
Do you think that's typical of Hollywood? Do you think that people really have to do stuff like that to get ahead in Hollywood?
I don't know about Hollywood, but yeah, if you're in a small town DJ, sure. You know, I mean, you're going to have girls calling all the time on the hotline, but by the time you get to them, you find out it's, you know, they come in and they're a barnyard plumper, and what are you going to do with that? You know? So, And you didn't have any experience like that? I mean, your dad was a truck driver or something, right?
Yeah, but I never ask. You know, those stories, I don't talk to my parents about weird stuff. I was always brought up in that beaver cleaver kind of world that mom and dad were absolutely perfect and nothing bad ever happened. You know, and so I'm sort of weirded out sometimes when I hear people go like, you know, I told my mom the other day about this guy that tried to, you know, hump me in the back seat of the car. I'm like, how do you talk to your parents about stuff like that?
That's right. Well, you know, my dad used to do a lot of blow back in the early 80s, and he was one of my best customers. But anyway, at one point, he was chasing me around with his cute girlfriend going, Larry, you want to do a three-way? I'm hiding in drapes, running around all over the place trying to escape that dude. You know, he's got an excellent voice. He's not a very good-looking man at all. You know. Anyway.
So he would have to have the drugs and the stardom to actually attract. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I would think so. I mean, the guy's got a golden voice. I don't know. I think he talked to him once, but yeah, he's
He's got the radio pipes.
He's got the radio thing. He sure does, man. Yep, that's what he did. And he wanted to do that from the time he was 15. So that's what he did, and I admire that. You know.
Now, what has kept you from seriously following your dream of stand-up? You know, the stuff that you write and I read, have got a great sense of humor. How have you not just totally went straight into sitcom writing or movie writing and not piddled around with stuff like Sacramento or Placerville or Vacaville or whatever, Shitville?
Okay, that's a great question. I've actually started the comedy career a few times, but I keep screwing up and having to come back up to Sacramento for one reason or another, and then I have to do a day job. You know, I mean, I started doing comedy down in Orange County in 1989, and that was going really well. But then my wife said, come back, and I did, and that was stupid. So, you know, and then back in, what is it, 2001, the cops decided they didn't want me to have my car anymore, so I kind of had to walk back to Sacramento on that one. I've been here ever since.
You never had to walk back into Sacramento.
Well, no, I had to walk back to I was actually late to a gig in Victorville, and the cops took my car because I was driving on a suspended license from a previous DUI. Yeah.
And this was on the way to a gig?
Yes. Right, I was up to Victorville. Was it the Ramada Inn? It's called the Comedy Outpost. And I was booked, and I was running a little bit late, but I didn't really realize I was doing 81 miles an hour at my exit. And he came in, checked my license, and said, "Oh, you're a comic, okay? Yeah, I'll have you out of here in just a second. Let me check your record." And then he came back, and he was like, "You know, I got to take your car, right?" I was like, "Well, you have a car. Why are you taking mine, right?"
You have a car.
Right. So anyway, yeah, I took that. And so I did my gig, and then I got a room at the Ramada given to me. It was the band room. But I had to call a friend of mine to come get me. And he came down, we packed up my shit, and I went back to Sacramento. So,
and that sort of was it for a while.
Yeah, that's it for a while. But, you know, now I'm up here kind of helping my dad because he's getting old, and he's doing stupid stuff like, you know, I'm lighting cigarettes with his oxygen on his face, that kind of thing.
You took care of him in his party days, and now you're taking care of him in his diaper days.
Oh, sure. It was fun because, you know, I worked in a restaurant a long, long time ago, and I used to go to Dad's radio station because it was on the way to work and do a couple of lines on his console and then, you know, drive the rest of the way to work, and I'd hear him on the radio going, "Yeah, that was the Doobie Brothers." Yeah. Great.
You knew exactly what he'd been up to.
Oh, there's no question about that. Sure. Well, you know, I mean, when you have somebody that does stuff in your family and you become of the age where they want to, you know, talk to you about the drug talk.
Uh-huh.
No, my dad didn't. I didn't get a lecture. All I got was, "This is my dad's drug talk." Swear to God, he went like this. Ear. That was it.
Don't get too high and get me in trouble.
It was amazing. Yeah, wow. My dad had really good pot, and I didn't know what good pot was back in the early 70s. It was good stuff, you know. I'd stare in a mirror going, "Is that really me? That's me. Look, it's me."
But pot now, they say, is stronger than the pot of the past. Like, it's been bred and genomed and whatever they do, DNA'd to become like just brain-killing pot.
Sure. Well, the old man had to quit smoking pot, so now he's eating cookies. Yeah.
But now at his age and state, would it almost be better for him to just, Dad, smoke this and sit in one place for a while?
Yeah, I think so. But I think he's kind of lost the flavor for doing all that stuff. You know, he takes handfuls of Vicodins and morphine, and, you know, but there's no room for pot anymore.
True.
You know, and, you know, but he's got a caregiver that's, she's off the hook. Yeah.
Is she like a naughty nurse, like from the movies?
Oh, no. This is somebody, you take one look at her and you just go, oh, wow, I wish I could forget that. Yeah.
Some things can't be unseen.
That's exactly right. Yeah, this is one of them, man. And what's funny is she's a paid caregiver, but she starts drinking at 1 in the afternoon. So by the time 8 o'clock at night rolls around, I start walking in the door. And then it's like, oh, she's shivering and swearing. And I'm thinking, well, how do I get rid of you? Wow.
Now you're taking care of two old people.
Well, I don't think I'm taking care of her. I pretty much let her stumble around wherever she wants to go. But, yeah, I wish you could come out. I'm trying to get you out here. I told you about that.
Yeah, I'd like to. I used to work, where is it, Fairfield?
Oh, yeah, I know, the Pepper Bellies. Sure.
Yeah, Pepper Bellies. Oh. Is that still open and around?
No, sir. That burned to the ground about a year ago.
Oh, soon after the shooting?
They are gone. Yeah, they had that stupid shooting. Next thing you know, Pepper Bellies were in the ground. I don't know. You know, bad luck, I guess.
Yeah. You know? I used to work the old Sacramento club there. Was it Last Laughs or Last Unlimited?
They got karaoke this weekend, I think.
Oh, so it's not even doing much as a comedy club anymore.
Not really, huh? And what's weird is Tommy T's, which is another comedy club up here in Northern California. They've been like in the Bay Area forever. And they just turned into something called Jazz and Jokers, and there's nobody coming in that I've ever heard of. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. So the Punchline is really the only draw around here, and there's nothing in Placerville where I'm at. So I either want to bring in, you know, an occasional maybe, you know, lawn type of situation at the family inn that's down the street, and bring like you and, you know, a bunch of other of my friends. Or maybe we talked about doing a festival last year, remember?
Yeah. I think that's what they're doing that here in Denver. They're doing a thing called the High Plains Comedy Festival. And I think
that's like in a week or something, isn't it?
Right. And I think they're doing stuff like that too, because more and more people, you know, like, hey, we're just going to have to do this on our own because we can't get the clubs behind us or whatever.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Now, I'm working with an event planner that is awesome. She used to work at the Davis Family Inn, and she did all the weddings and stuff like that, and she knows exactly what she's doing. But I'll show you some pictures of this place. It is absolutely beautiful. It really is. And it's only about an eighth of a mile away from my house.
So you could actually get drunk after performing and walk home from that?
Yeah, I wouldn't go home. Yeah, I'd just sleep in the bushes or something. I'm not going home to that old bitch.
Oh, you just find your 24-hour Taco Bell and sleep in a booth.
I know, exactly. You're damn right. What's weird is I'm going to get home and they're going to go, we heard that. I said, no, you didn't. I saw your hearing aid. It's broken. There's no way.
So somebody has to hear this on a hearing aid?
I'm thinking because they said, oh, we're going to listen. Oh, okay, good. Go ahead.
Your dad will just be like, oh, I was listening and it just reminded me of the good old days before I had to deal with
this. My dad was the funniest guy around, man. He had a gay weatherman in 1968. Yeah.
Really?
It was Lamont the Weather Fairy. And he was just another DJ, but he sounded gay and he was doing all kinds of gay shit. It was hilarious. Yeah.
But that would be so politically incorrect now, though.
Exactly. You can't do anything anymore.
Well, you could have an actual gay guy doing that now.
Oh, sure.
What it would have to be. It would have to be like, you can be the most flamboyant, over-the-top, silly, funny, but it has to be real. Other than that, it'd be like, you know, you're just making fun of us. No, I was doing the same thing.
Exactly.
I'm doing the same thing you would have been doing.
Blow in your hand and smell it.
Yeah, I don't understand how, you know... It's like everybody got so upset about, Tonto, Johnny Depp.
Yeah, right.
Like, why, this is politically insensitive. Why did they just get an American Indian to play the part? Why does he have to do, you know, it's an actor. It's a movie. It's not fucking reality, you know?
That's right. Yeah, I know. Yeah, this guy had scissors for hands about 20 years ago, right?
Right.
Okay, so can he play an Indian?
Yeah.
Not much of a stretch.
It's like a high school play now. You couldn't even do the Pilgrims and the Indians because it'd be like,
right.
Why do they have those kids dressed like Indians? I don't know. Why didn't they hire real Indians? Because they'd have been like 40 with 6-year-old kids. That'd be the funniest play ever, though, wouldn't it? If you got like elementary kids to dress up like Pilgrims, but then had to go hire real Indians to play the Indians.
Uh-huh. Yeah, have a couple of real Pilgrims come in. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw a picture of Obama this morning that cracked me up. He's always got that smug kind of, you know, I'm cool look, but I've noticed he's only pulled that off for about 15 seconds. Then all of a sudden, he's just like a jackass, you know?
How does that happen?
I don't know, but he looks like he might have been a hard partier, or maybe still, you know?
You mean like a friend of your dad's?
Say what?
Like he might have been a friend of your dad's? That kind of party?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I think he's done it all. Think he's ever woke up like wrapped in saran wrap with dicks drawn on his face? I bet he has. He's like that stupid smile. So Clint was standing there laughing.
Do you know people that's ever happened to? Because there's a whole magazine section out of a British magazine that's dedicated to those drunk pictures where you take your friends and, you know, mark on them or paint on them or do whatever. Have you ever had any of that ever happen to you?
Yes, I have. Down when I was in Huntington Beach, we used to do nitrous oxide parties, and I woke up one morning, and I was feeling like crap. And so I walked down to the local convenience store and walked in. And I noticed that everybody was, like, pointing and smiling and everything. And I thought I just looked like a wreck, you know, because I'm wearing yesterday's clothes, barefoot. And then when I got to the cashier with my aspirin, I caught a glimpse of myself in the hot dog thing. And there's dicks on my face. Yeah, right.
Did you say anything? Did they say anything to you?
No, nobody did. Well, one lady said he might want to wash that off. I'm not kidding.
And you, why didn't you just go, hey, lady, you wear your makeup the way you like, I'll wear mine.
No, sorry, man. I did not have to wear it all to do that. We had like 3 major tanks of this nitrous stuff. Ugh. I used to show up at our apartment with carloads of tanks, man. It was amazing. I don't really know where he got it, but we just stand upright with huge balloons in our mouths and play video games on a big old Mitsubishi big screen until we passed out.
The good old days, huh?
The good old days. But yeah, I mean, you partied, right? I mean, what did you do?
I was never a big partier. I didn't even start drinking until like I was 21 because it wasn't legal. I was that kind of, you know, like, I won't break the law. But then once I turned 21, I drank like, you know, I had a hose hooked to me. So, but that was my idea of party. It was strictly alcohol, and it was like, you know, is the show over? Right. Let's drink till midday, you know, that kind of.
You told me that when I met you like 13 years ago, that's one of the first things you said. You said that you didn't drink Jack Daniels anymore, but you used to. Is that right?
Right. I always say I retired undefeated.
It's cool. You know,
I had a friend say when I quit.
I
had a friend say when I quit drinking that Jack Daniels actually had a drop in profit.
Yeah, right. Sure. Me too. Yeah, I used to drink a lot of Goldschlager.
And then one day you shit a chain.
I did, yeah. Now, what was it? Chuck Stanhope said, I used to pan my shit for gas money.
I always wondered how they could put, like, real gold. Do they still do that? Because that'd be really expensive now.
I don't know. I don't know. I really don't. I would drink it and then piss and then drink it again and then piss and drink it again. By the time I got to San Diego, there wouldn't be anything left. It all evaporate.
So you never got to look for gold?
No. No, not at all. It's real gold. Well, good. You know, I don't care. You know, it makes me feel good.
Speaking of gold, I see these commercials on TV that always say, you know, mail us your gold. You know, you've seen those, right. put what old watches and chains and your teeth and mail them to us, and we'll tell you what it's worth, and we'll send you back money.
Right.
Do you do you see a scam there?
Nah, not at all. Leave a tape. It's a leap of faith. Just put all your valuables in a bag and send it on over, man. Yeah, you'll get something. They'll hand you back. They'll ship you back a bag of boogers.
Yeah, or they'll ship you back a note saying, you know, what you sent us wasn't real gold. It was plated, so you only had $6 worth.
Well, yeah, but you sent me a bag of boogers. No, but they're really good boogers, Mr. Hines.
Those are cocaine boogers. Did you not taste one?
Yeah, you hear me in the background going...
I can't believe I'm actually doing an interview with somebody sitting in a bathroom at work.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually pacing the bathroom, but it's not very big. You know, it's probably about the size of O.J. Simpson's cell house.
You know there's people outside that bathroom door right now going, you know, he's in there talking to himself.
I know. I know. I kind of warned everybody, but, you know, I'm not doing what I really thought I was going to be doing, so, you know, they can pick up a little.
What did you think you were going to be doing?
Oh, nothing. You can have me back some other time. We'll do the real stuff later. Okay?
When you don't feel quite so like there's people listening. I can't say those words.
I've never really done anything without people there before. I mean, I used to do like open mics and stuff, and there'd be like three people by the time I got up there at 12:45, you know, and that was a little uncomfortable. But there's really no one here. Is there somebody hearing this right now, or are you going to post this later on?
Oh, this gets posted later on.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
Yeah, this isn't going out live right now. This is just...
Okay, because if it was, I would lose my erection like that.
Oh. You know? You couldn't go back outside the door without one of those. They'd be like, what's wrong with Larry? He came out of the bathroom without an erection this time.
That's right. He came out rubbing himself. I was just talking to my best friend. We were doing a fake radio show.
So you mentioned there you did some of those midnight shows with three people.
I always
wondered about those because I didn't do many of those because Houston didn't have that kind of scene. But I know L.A. did. Uh-huh. You'd go up at 2 in the morning at the the Comedy Store to four people. What good did that do you? I never could figure out how going up in front of four or five people that were drunk and tired is going to help your material or your timing at all.
Well, not having anybody in the room is bad, but not having, like, I don't know, 13 comics in the back and then two people drinking in front of you, that's the worst. Because, you know, they're sitting there going, oh, I hope he tanks. I hope he's doing really good. Oh, shit, I hope he tanks. Right.
Yeah, but you're going to tank in front of two people at 2 in the morning.
Yeah, that's true. You know, you have to talk to, I guess you got to blow the guy that makes the list or whatever it is.
I think it is? Because I've watched some people over the years that worked a lot of those clubs. I think they got so good at bombing that their self-esteem and their cockiness on stage makes it look like they're doing well when they're not. So they've become like, they go work a full room and they're like, you know, I pulled that off well. No, not really. No.
Okay. Yeah, not so much. Yeah. I remember one time I was performing at Pepper Belly's because a good friend of mine got me a guest set one night. And I walked in thinking, oh, yeah, I can do this. And got up there and completely laid a golden turd. Do you remember that?
No. I blocked it from my head.
Of course you do. Of course you do. And the worst part was I was trying to maybe have a minute to warm up. But there was a whole bunch of people. You remember that Red Hat Society that was there that night?
Yes, yes.
I was up front. I was messing with the lady with the hats on. And then I forgot what I was going to do. And so the worst part was when I looked in the back and I saw you and Del Van Dyke, two people I've known for years and never saw together. And I know Del's going, holy shit, what's he doing? Well, he's going to go on the toilet. He's going to do that right in front of us. Yes, but he's a really good writer. So I got something to fall back on.
Well, I think it's a funny twist right there because you were talking about how you had years ago two people in the audience and a room full of comics in the back.
Yep.
Where now you've got a room full of people and two comics in the back.
Right. Exactly. I got a packed house. I wasn't even paying attention to anybody but you and Dell. Yeah. I'm thinking there, I'm going, oh, I'm sweating bullets. I'm shrinking, you know, and I'm going, oh, I wonder what they're saying. Oh, this is awful.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you're, as long as you keep doing it and like keep practicing, it's going to get better. You know, you got to get your timing back. Where they get your chops back, they say.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And you are absolutely right, by the way. That's it. You got to have stage time. And, you know, I've been doing it for, well, when I got into it, it was fun. But now that I'm out of it so long, you know, it's almost like a chore, really.
Oh, definitely. I think the longer you're out, the more you want to stay out. Because I know guys that got out and got a job, and they kind of dabbled back into it, and they got right back out because it was like, no, you know what, it wasn't as much fun as it used to be. No, because you didn't go back into it full force.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I love to write jokes. I really do. I love writing jokes. I love performing jokes, too, but, you know, I got to get back into that. That's all.
Right. Well, don't let any of it slide. You know, your writing, like I said, to me is some of the best I've ever read. When you send me some stuff about, you'll just get off on a tangent and you'll write like two or three paragraphs of just a bit, and I'll be laughing while I'm reading it. I don't know if it's the words or if it stumbles you when you get up there to do it. Do you consider yourself a better writer? Or is that what, so you do, that's what it is. You're a better writer.
Yeah, sure. I'm a better writer. And you know what? I learned how to do it from you. I really did. I mean, until I bought your CD, Too Much Man for Just One Woman and Other Lies.
Other Lies, uh-huh.
That's right. Well, when I got that, I'd never really heard something like somebody do an hour of 8 laughs a minute like that. And I was like, wow. So I sent you an email and I said, you just showed me something. Thank you. And I did not expect to hear from you. But 12 seconds later, bing, you're welcome.
Whoa,
fuck,
he's
in my computer.
Well, man, I appreciate the good words and the support that you've given me over the years. And whenever I, like, you know, every once in a while I'll go, I have an idea, I need a punchline, and you'll throw me a bone, and I appreciate that, so.
Look, you are always and always will be my favorite comic, and I'll never say that to anybody again because I just told, what, 1,000 other people?
35 people.
That. Oh, 35 people.
35
oh,
people.
That.
No, actually, you know, I'm not sure how many listeners. The podcast is really doing well. I just saw yesterday that on Podbean.com, they always put up their on their front page the popular websites, the popular podcasts.
I made
their list of popular podcasts. So,
dude,
yay!
I love that. That's fantastic.
Yay!
Dude, you know, having grown up around radio and bands and recording studios and that kind of thing, radio has really, really, really done a complete metamorphosis from the 60s and 70s from when I first started listening. So, just amazing. Because I guess the internet's going to take over over television viewing pretty soon, right?
Oh, yeah, because a lot of shows are going straight to, like, you watch full episodes at CBS.com and, you know, Netflix is all online. There's
very strange.
It's like radio and TV. They've got to understand that people no longer want to be dictated to. Like, this is all you're allowed to hear, or this is all you're allowed to see. No, the internet says I can watch anything I want to. I can even watch a funny show made in the basement of somebody's house at 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Yes, you can do that. You can go into an empty house with no furniture in it with a computer, and bam, hey, you're entertained. That's cool.
Exactly. You know? I love that.
As long as you just wipe off the walls before you leave, no one will ever know you were in there.
That's right. Don't write "You're next" in blood on the wall.
That's correct. Yes, sir.
All right, man. I appreciate you coming on the show. Let's do this again sometime when I got you outside of the men's room.
Okay. I love that, man. Thank you very much, man. You are tip top.
Larry Hyde, are you going to be doing any stand up anywhere? Do you? All right.
Well, no.
Okay, then I won't say.
Not until I bring the show up here, but Carlotta and I are like, I don't know, 8 months away from that.
Right. So, all right. Well, dude, appreciate you coming on.
All right, talk to you later, man.
All right. Hey, flush before you walk out. I want a bathroom sound on the show.
Hold on.
Larry Hyde, everybody. Larry Hyde. All right, dude. See you later.
All right. Thanks, bud. Bye.
In the basement of the mud flap house, flapping and poo. And the underwear thing rings a noose. And poo licks herself. And flap contemplates manly things. He thinks about guns and trucks and stooges three. Men and boys, and that doesn't sound right. He thinks about booze and bacon and power tools. Come with me, let your mask you leave. Oh, won't you come with me and remind.